At DSW, we ask the important questions, like, what shoes are you going to wear? Whether you're prepping for wedding season, festival season, or just planning the ultimate vacay, the right shoes can make or break an RSVP. So own the moment. You've got big plans, and we've got just the shoes. At the perfect price, of course. Get ready to get ready with Designer Shoe Warehouse. Head to your DSW store or DSW.com today, and let us surprise you.
It's Charles Barkley here with Wayfair. And let me tell you, game day is serious business at my house. If I'm grilling, chilling, and watching hoops, my outdoor setup better be ready to play. That's where Wayfair wins. From patio seating and umbrellas to grills and grilling accessories, Wayfair's got it all. And it shows up fast. I'm talking fast and easy delivery. So level up your grill game and your outdoor chill game. And head to Wayfair.com to get your outdoor space ready for the season.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Nerds! Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ever Google a money question and end up 12 tabs deep with 12 different answers? This podcast is your shortcut back to clarity. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast breaks down financial decisions with a team of trusted journalists. They explain the why behind decisions like investing, home buying, and choosing credit cards with clear, research-backed insights. No jargon, no misinformation. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
Portions of the day's programming are reproduced by means of electrical transcriptions or tape recordings.
This is the Bob and Jeff Show, starring Bob Lutz.
These employees that are always wanting a pat on the back, I don't have time for it. You think people are running by me telling me what a good job I'm doing on this show?
Heil Heil!
Jeff Lutz.
Never. And there's a reason for it.
You're not doing that good of a job.
Oh, shocking. Monstrous.
97.5 and 1240 KFH.
Listen to this, if you can.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to a Wednesday edition, the Bob and Jeff Show, KFH Radio. Bob Lutz, Jeff Lutz, co-hosting Max Power, producing engineering, and 869-1240, the IHOP hotline. I see now why you're a little dour.
Why am I dour? I haven't said a word today.
Check the scoreboard.
What is it now?
4-2.
Are we batting? Are we winning? Do we have anybody on base?
Going to the eighth.
It's probably over.
Well, Arizona's a good team, and you don't want to mess with them.
Arizona, I'm going to say this, not just because the Guardians are losing to them. Arizona might be the best team in baseball as of right now. Their rotation is about to...
I would calm down a little bit on that.
Their rotation is about to be Gallen, Fott, Rodriguez, Kelly, Montgomery, which is very, very good. Their lineup is good. They've got speed. They've got...
Their lineup's okay. They've got Josh Bell hitting fourth.
Well, Josh Bell's like 12 for 10 in this series.
Well, you can't get him out, but everybody else seems to be finding a way.
And the only reason he's hitting fourth is because Christian Walker is not.
Well, he's hurt, right? But that's not. Let's not go crazy. They're
Arizona,
a good team.
Arizona is a very good team.
No, they're a good team that's nine games over.
No, they're a very
You're
good
a
team.
You're a floundering team that's 22 games over. And that's where we are.
Why don't you just listen to me? Why don't you just trust me? I know what I'm talking about. They're not just a good team. They had Diamondbacks went to the World Series last year, and right now their roster is better than their World Series roster. And they're very
good.
No,
that's wrong.
It's not wrong.
Corbin Carroll's not having nearly the year he had last year. In fact, he's having a pretty poor year.
Okay, but their pitching is lights out.
He did homer today. They're good. I told you that's a team to watch. But they're not as good as they were last year.
Yes, they are. They absolutely are.
Rodriguez has not pitched.
He's about to.
Montgomery is easing his way in. Gallen hasn't had as good a year as he had last year. Nor has Merrill Kelly, who's been hurt.
I'm telling you, that team is primed. If they get back to the World Series, I'm not going to be surprised. You just got to hear me. Have you played them yet?
Of course we have. We
like
knocked those
4 months
off.
Ago when they weren't that good. Now they are very good. And you need to be on the lookout. They're going to be in the playoffs. They're dangerous. Just be ready.
Oh, Jeff.
Just be ready.
I wish you knew a little bit more than you know, but
just
it's okay.
Trust me. Just believe me. Instead of you can push back in your mind, but outwardly I need you to be like, okay, well, let's see. Let's see. I believe you. I know that you've seen them. You're watching.
I'm the one that said months ago that watched that team.
No, you didn't.
Yes, I did.
Well, I'm telling you now.
And they're a good team.
They're a very good team.
But I don't view them as the favorite to get to the World Series.
Well, they very easily could. Who is?
National League. I view the Padres as the current favorite.
Really? And they're like 12 over. So what?
Well, here's why.
Separates those three games.
Well, here's why. Would you like to hear? I don't view the Phillies as being the favorites anymore because I don't trust them.
Well, they've been
horrible.
Their bullpen's
not good enough. I don't trust the Mets, even though the Mets have been one of the best teams in baseball over the last month or two. I don't trust the Brewers because they haven't. They're winning a not a great division. I don't trust the Dodgers because their lineup's not good enough.
Fine.
So the team I trust is the Padres.
Okay. Well, the team I trust is Arizona, and we'll see how it goes down in just a couple short months.
We will. But you look at that Padres team. Now, they got a bunch of guys who are having good years in their lineup. Arizona doesn't. They got a couple. But the Padres have a better lineup. I mean, you
and
look
Arizona
at
Arizona has much better pitching.
No, not really now. See, that's where you win a ride.
They will once.
You got Jerickson Profar having a really good year. Jackson Merrill. You got guys up
so
and down that.
You trust Jerickson Profar.
That up and down that lineup.
Two guys you've named.
I'm telling you. Cronenworth's having a good year.
Not really.
Yeah, he's hitting. He's having an okay year. Luis Arias is having an okay year. Bogart started to hit. A lot of things to like about that Padres.
Yeah, you like San Diego, I like Arizona, and never the twain shall meet.
Well, we'll see now. Well, Max has it written down. I call the Padres to have a better shot than the Diamondbacks.
I just saw the Padres play Cleveland, and they took two out of three, and they were good, but I think Arizona is better. That is what I see with my eyes.
Well, when are you going to get good again?
Probably never.
That's what you need to worry about.
Are we winning yet?
No, of course not.
Well, that's too bad.
You're not winning. And you know, as critical as I am of my baseball team, I'm right there last night watching them.
Well, good for you.
I'm getting excited when Victor Scott II hits his first big league home run.
How'd that look?
I'm thrilled when Tommy Pham hits another one. Boy, what a good acquisition. I hope we give him something, because 19 different teams should have went out and gotten him. Why didn't you? You downplayed it, and I remember that. Oh, we don't want Tommy Pham in the clubhouse. Tommy Pham is a better hitter than Lane Thomas.
They're about the same, and Lane Thomas is 0 for his last 19.
Then they're not the same.
Well, over the course of the season.
You know what Tommy Pham's hitting? As a Cardinal? About 900.
Okay, well, he's played four games.
Well, how many has Lane Thomas played?
More than that. He's 0 for his last 19.
Right.
That's at least five games right there.
So that's what
he's terrible.
That's what I'm trying to tell you. The Royals could have used Tommy Pham. Anybody in contention could have used Tommy Pham. You know what he doesn't ever do?
When?
He never takes a bat at bat. You know what I mean? Like, he never looks silly in a bat. He's always pumping up there. He's good.
He's a professional.
Yeah, he's good.
He's a veteran.
And I'm glad we got him. I just hope they don't waste it, which I think they're going to do.
Well, they're probably going to waste it, but that's okay. At least you'll have some fun down the stretch. Get some energy into your team, which is has none.
No, they don't. And I don't need you to tell me who has energy.
Well, I'm telling you.
You know who always has energy?
Who?
Me.
No, I wish.
What do you mean?
Not always.
On this show, I do.
Well, go for it.
Here's what we have. at 2:25, and this is a guest who's going to mean something only to Jeff and me, but we think you'll enjoy hearing from him because he means something to Jeff and me. His name's Jim Ed Norman. He's a lifelong friend of our guy, Don Henley. They grew up together in Linden, Texas, believe it or not, in the middle of nowhere in eastern Texas. They formed a band when they were young guys. They moved to California. They tried their band. It didn't work. Henley went another way with the Eagles. Jim Ed Norman has been a part of Don Henley's life for 70 years. And he's going to be our guest today at 2:25. At 2:45, Derek Stroop, comedian, will join the show. And at 3:25, we will continue our Big 12 previews with Don Williams from the Lubbock Avalanche.
Oh, we're Don's talk, back.
We're going to talk Texas Tech. That guy's amazing. He's been there forever.
He has, and he doesn't look like he's ever leaving. Do we not need Mike Furches today?
I hadn't heard from Mike.
Okay,
I thought he was on the road. So I guess not. We'll work Mike in when he gets back.
Yeah, of course.
We love Mike. You told him to stop in Effingham, Illinois, of all places.
Yeah, what's wrong with
in Effingham?
I don't know. They got a Nike outlet store. They got an Arby's. It's a nice place.
That's a stop along the highway.
Yeah, I like I-70 stops.
He's looking for a little more, something with a little more appeal.
What are your top five cities along I-70?
I don't think about it. I've never thought about it.
Well, you got to put Terre Haute in there.
No, I don't have to put Terre Haute in there.
I'm a Terre Haute guy. You got to put Zanesville, Ohio.
I don't even know what the cities are.
Obviously, you're going to put.
I go right through them.
Obviously, you got to put Effingham in there.
I go right through them. I never stop at one of them.
Really?
Nope. St. Louis is my favorite.
And Indianapolis, of course.
I like Colby.
Well, that's west. You don't really.
I like Hayes.
We don't go west a lot.
The state of Kansas.
No, nothing else?
I like Colorado.
That's barely. Colorado?
I like. You know what I like?
What?
I like Salina.
You're not a Zanesville guy?
No, I like Kansas. Can't stand Ohio.
Really? What's wrong with Ohio?
You know what's wrong with Ohio. It's never been any good.
Zanesville right over to Pittsburgh. It's a wonderful trek.
So anyway, that's what we got coming up on the show today. Royals going to avoid a sweep against the Boston Red Sox. These games now really start to mean a lot when you're in the hunt, as the Royals are. And Boston is right behind them in the wild card chase in the American League. Let's update that. It's been a little while since I looked at that. Where are we in the wild card chase in the American League?
I don't know.
Right now, the Orioles, Twins, and Royals are in. Royals with the last wild card spot. Boston half a game out, so that could change tonight. The Astros, 4 out. The Rays, 4.5 out. And that's your wild card chase in the American League. The Royals were moving up in the race with Cleveland and Minnesota, but a couple of losses here. And you don't want to be losing games at this time of the year.
It hurts.
It's tough.
But you're not going to win them all. And Cleveland has Minnesota this weekend, so if they're for real, they'll take care of business. And if they're not for real, if they're in between, they'll not take care of business.
Royals go from this series to a brief two-gamer against St. Louis Friday and Saturday.
That's with having Sunday off.
I know, that's weird, but that's the quirk of the schedule. Then the Royals are at Minnesota, at Cincinnati, home against the Angels and Phillies. Then they go on a big road trip, 4 in Cleveland, 4 in Houston, then at home for 3 against Cleveland, 3 against Cincinnati. Then they go to New York to play the Yankees. They're on the road to face the Pirates, which is no fun. They've got a very difficult schedule. They got to get through all of that before they end the season with Detroit and San Francisco at home and a road trip to Washington and Atlanta.
It's never easy out there.
You like being in contention, Royals fans? It just takes the life out of you. Because every pitch now matters.
Yeah, it's awful.
And I kind of like not being in the mix.
You do?
I could get used to it.
Just sit in front of your TV with no stakes and nothing really that matters.
Well, I've still got my team's still kind of in it, right?
I guess.
Let's check the National League wild card picture.
Kind of by default.
In the National League, you still got the Padres, Diamondbacks, and Braves. Mets a game and a half out. Cardinals 3, Pittsburgh 4, Giants 4.5, Reds 5.5, Cubs 6. It's so tight in the National League.
Yeah, but once you're 6 back and you're
tough.
And behind that many teams.
I didn't put the Cubs in. I almost didn't say the Cubs, but I decided to go ahead and say them.
I guess. They're half game behind.
Can I say the Cardinals are still in? They're 3 out. They're only behind the Mets and the Braves. The Braves are in a free fall right now.
Yeah, just all the good teams have done that recently, except I guess the Yankees, although they had one kind of before the All-Star break. Phillies are still in theirs. Braves are still in theirs. Guardians can't really pull the nose up.
I wouldn't give you a nickel for the Cardinals' chances, but I gotta hang in there, don't I?
Well, do your best.
They got the Rays again tonight. Kyle Gibson on the mound against, I'm sorry, Eric Fetty tonight. And then Kyle Gibson tomorrow. Then the Royals, they face Lorenzen and Waka and not Reagans or Lugo. That's a good thing.
Sure.
But the Royals, I don't know if they can beat the Royals.
It's tough.
They didn't beat them in St. Louis.
Yeah, I don't know. Probably not going to go on the road and win both of those games. You ready to take a break and get to Jimmy?
No, it drives me nuts. This is driving me nuts.
Well, let's take a break.
I'm not taking a break.
I told Jim we might call a bit early.
We'll get it. We'll get to Jim Ed Norman. He's 77 years old. He's not hanging around waiting for us to call.
He sure is.
You think he's excited about this?
I don't know.
Who are these people? What's his wife's name? Martha?
It's probably Martha.
Who are these
people?
Always
Martha.
He can't be excited about it.
He said he enjoyed which. Here's his first text to me. Jeff, I'm so sorry. Two so's. Have been in the studio nonstop and just getting caught up on texts, emails, and phone calls. I would love to participate in anything Eagles should you ever do it again. I was trying to do something for Friday's show. Didn't really pan out. P.S. I love Wichita and enjoyed my time there.
Wonder when he was here.
We'll have to ask him.
We will have to ask him.
He said, I have time. Sounds like fun. He said, I'll make it work. Looking forward to it.
Well, we'll see what Jim Ed brings.
Yeah, absolutely. I bet he brings a lot. One of the great conductors of our time.
Yeah, he was a musical director for the Hotel California tour, right?
Yeah, well, he was a conductor.
The musical conductor. They have many conductors.
Musical directors, I think, Will Hollis.
No, you have a musical conductor, and then you have a real conductor.
I don't think
you understand what I'm saying? Somebody
really.
Who's conducting.
A train conductor?
No, a conductor.
I don't know what that means.
The systems.
I don't know. I don't know what that means.
It's fun to tweak you.
Let's go to...
Don't be telling me what to do.
Come on. We don't get this opportunity very often.
You want me to do most of the interview?
Of course not.
We'll take a break. When we come back, ladies and gentlemen, we'll talk with Jim Ed Norman, musician deluxe, and the reason he's on this show is because he's worked closely with Don Henley, who's a lifelong friend, of course, the leader of the Eagles. And we'll talk with Jim Ed Norman next.
At DSW, we ask the important questions, like, what shoes are you going to wear? Whether you're prepping for wedding season, festival season, or just planning the ultimate vacay, the right shoes can make or break an RSVP. So own the moment. You've got big plans and we've got just the shoes. At the perfect price, of course. Get ready to get ready with Designer Shoe Warehouse. Head to your DSW store or DSW.com today and let us surprise you.
Game day at my place is kind of a big deal. If I'm grilling, chilling, and watching hoops, my outdoor patio setup better be ready to play. That's where Wayfair wins. From patio seating and umbrellas to grills and grilling accessories, Wayfair's got it all, and it shows up fast. I'm talking championship level fast and easy delivery. So level up your grill game and your outdoor chill game and head to Wayfair.com now to get your outdoor space ready for the season.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ever Google a money question and end up 12 tabs deep with 12 different answers? This podcast is your shortcut back to clarity. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast breaks down financial decisions with a team of trusted journalists. They explain the why behind decisions like investing, home buying, and choosing credit cards with clear, research-backed insights. No jargon, no misinformation. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app. Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
This is the Bob and Jeff Show.
He's joining us now, Jim Ed Norman. Longtime musician from the state of Florida. I mistakenly said you grew up with Don Henley. You may have grown up a little bit musically with Don Henley, but you met him when you were both at North Texas State University. Jim Ed, thank you for being on the show. It's a great honor to have you.
It's my pleasure. Can you hear me okay?
We can hear you just fine. So,
okay, great.
My son Jeff,
You said Henley. I thought we were going to talk about Philadelphia. I got a text from Jeff saying the Eagles, and I thought, I love Philadelphia. And Jalen Hurts is doing so well. I mean, they kind of tanked last year, but I thought, I don't get called often for sports. I don't know anything about sports, except you said I was from Florida, and you're absolutely right. When somebody would question me through the years and say, you've done a lot of producing, you've done a lot of stuff in music, what's your favorite record, Jimmy? And I'd say, my favorite record. That would be 17-0, the Miami Dolphins, 1972.
There you go.
That's
well,
good stuff.
We do want to turn this away from sports, okay?
Okay.
If that's right. Okay.
Oh, shucks.
That's okay. So, as I said, you
are the hottest team in the business right now.
They are pretty good, and they're just up the road from us. So we know we get a lot of Chiefs information on this show, undoubtedly. So tell us how this all came about in way back when you were in college, and how you met Don Henley, and how you formed the band Felicity in 1969, and where that all went, and it became Shiloh, and then you met Kenny Rogers. It's a story that's been told, but not necessarily from your lips, to us at least. Tell us a little bit about that.
And how fast do I tell it?
You can go at your own pace.
So the first thing to say is the band Felicity had existed prior to my meeting Don. They had been together since junior high school. I met Don at, as you mentioned, North Texas State. I'd gone there to participate in the big band program. North Texas State in those days, and still is, the preeminent big band jazz school in the country, in the world for that matter. You had that school supplying Woody Herman, Stan Kenton. I mean, the list went on and on and on. And I'd gone there for that. I met Don one day walking down a beautiful fall day. People had their doors open to their apartments, grills out on the sidewalk, music blaring from the apartments. And I happened to pass by one, saw a guy sitting on a couch And as he tells it, he was playing a Led Zeppelin record. And I went back to my place and got a record and said, you need to listen to this. It was a group called the Dillards. They were a progressive bluegrass group. And I met Don in that moment. We became friends, had similar interests. When he talks about the experience of being given him the Dillards record, he says, it changed my life. It gave me a whole new perspective on music. We would drive into Fort Worth to see music acts and what have you. I got to know other members of the band when they would come into North Texas. Don's apartment is where a lot of the equipment got stored, so that when they would drive out of Northeast Texas on their way to play a gig at UT in Austin, they would stop at Don's and load up. I'd help them load. So I got to know the guys. And I had gone back to Florida. This was 1969, summer of 69, and I was working at Kennedy Space Center, Apollo 11. I have a little plaque that says, if it wasn't for me, we wouldn't have made it to the moon. And I got a call from Don, and he said that there had been unfortunate and catastrophic for them at the moment. Accident. One of the members of the band had been killed on a motorcycle. And he said, you have similar tastes and interests. You know the guys somewhat. Would you be interested in being in a band again? I used to play in bands in Florida as a kid growing up. And at this point, I think I'd come to grips with the fact that I was not an academic and was not cut out for that world. And so I dropped out of school and went up to a little town in Northeast Texas, just south of Texarkana, called Linden, Texas. And we began to rehearse and play and played parties and proms all around Texas, nightclubs there in Dallas and what have you. The relationship with Kenny that you mentioned, Kenny Rogers, had preceded me. It had actually been already in place and underway. They had recorded one single when then this accident happened. So I joined the band. We began to change somewhat of maybe the direction, the reasonable word to use, that the introduction of a steel guitar to the band, and we took on what in those days was a fairly new designation, country rock. But we went to Los Angeles. Kenny was our record producer. We made an album, and the album did like many albums can do, which is not very well. And the band, I think, just to some extent, the change in direction, the stresses that can come, I'm sure. If you haven't spent a lot of time with bands, you've been around enough and heard enough stories to know that bands, it's a tough environment where you have different perspectives and opinions about what direction you want to go, what you want to do, what you even want to say, the nature of songs and songwriting. And so the band broke up in Los Angeles, and essentially people went their separate ways. Don got with Glenn Frey, became the foundation there of the Eagles. Richard Bowden and Michael Bowden went to play with Ronstadt. Al Perkins, the steel guitar player, went to play with the Rolling Stones. And I went to work in a record store. I had, by this point, also decided that I really wasn't, I didn't want to be in a band anymore. I wanted to be an orchestral arranger, a record producer. I wanted to learn about the business. And so I went to work in a record store retail. That was sort of that final exchange between the creative process and the consumer in those days. And so I went to work in a record store, and that led, one thing led to another, to another, to another. I was fortunate in that the record that we had done, that had been the group Shiloh, on that record, my contribution, one of my contributions, I would say that, fortunately, I only wrote two songs on the Shiloh record, and even more fortunate was the fact that one of them was a steel guitar instrumental. And people always say, well, why do you say that? I say, because people couldn't then, they couldn't hear what an idiot I was, because the lyrics weren't really good in the song that I had written on the album. And on that steel guitar instrumental, I'd convinced Kenny that he needed to give me a shot writing a little orchestral piece. So he said, okay, you can do a string quartet. So I was able to write the string quartet to go with the steel guitar instrumental. Don did not forget that, and that was my real interest and passion. And so when they were working on their second album, they ended up calling me and giving me my shot and my chance to be an arranger of a substance, if you will.
Well, Jim, we have just a couple. We just have a few minutes, so we got a lot we want to ask you about. I'm gonna turn it over to my son Jeff.
Okay. I'll fast forward, Jim Ed, to the Hotel California tour and all the logistics behind that, because they were local musicians. Obviously, they got the music ahead of time and had it down by the time you guys all went on stage. But was that difficult to arrange and get that all coordinated?
No, we had a contractor that traveled with us who had dealt with a local contractor in every city. We had great players. They were all real good players, and because they got the music in advance and knew what they were going to play, the music was not that difficult. My philosophy in arranging had been really to surround the song and the singer. What I wrote was not that difficult. There was one piece that had to be focused on a bit more than others. It was totally the orchestra, a piece that was based around the song Wasted Time. And it was an orchestral piece just called Wasted Time Reprise. And it was the most difficult piece, and that would require a little bit more focus. But again, these were all seasoned people, and it really wasn't difficult.
Jim Ed Norman is our guest. He has had an incredible life in the world of music. He's worked very closely with our idol, Don Henley. I've said often, Jim, I'm 69 years old. I became an Eagles fan in 1972. Don Henley is my favorite entertainer of all time, and I've paid very close attention to a lot of entertainers. I'm amazed by his talents. So tell us a little bit about those talents and what made Don Henley the force that he became.
Well, let me see. Some of it would be a function of just life and birth. An amazing voice that was just given. He also took his pursuits seriously. He was an English major at North Texas, and he was well-read. He began to understand probably more quickly than others and sooner than others the turn of the phrase and the gift of what the written word could provide in the context of a melody and a harmonic progression. That so much of music that grew out of the 60s and the early days. I don't want to say it was all banal, but there were a lot of music that did not focus on the lyric structure and sentiment and storytelling, if you will. And I think Don understood more quickly than most the value of a serious attention to the written word. And he would fret over the most minute part of that turn of the phrase. And you know, the value of even and the and for and but, and how those things would be placed in the context of what it is that he was saying. And I remember him at times standing in the studio with his yellow legal pad in front of him, where he would still be working on the lyric structure of a song. And he was then fortunate in that whatever he came up with to say and melodically that was that insinuated there melodically, he was also capable of delivering it vocally. So I would say that would be the foremost part of who he is, what he has been able to accomplish. And then he's also a man of, I think, great character, sincere in his beliefs politically, his sense of urgency about the world, the state of the world, environmentalism, and that kind of thing. And so early on, as he began to have success, he turned his attention to things other than just the creative pursuits that had gotten him there, and has made wonderful, wonderful contributions to the world at large, along with the world of music.
I wanted to ask you, Jim Ed, real quick about the Desperado album and what kind of a challenge that was for you, kind of the first project of that magnitude. You were writing parts that were being played by the London Philharmonic. They were recorded over in London. It was a concept album that I'm sure you had to try to grasp also. So what was that all like?
Well, it was an amazing experience because other than a little string quartet that I'd written on the Shiloh record, Desperado was the very first thing I ever did with an orchestra. And I frequently just skip over the string quartet thing and just say Desperado was the first arrangement I ever did. And it was daunting in that I chose a different structure for the orchestra. I had 36 players. The players were from, as you mentioned, the London Philharmonic, but Queen's Chamber Orchestra, London Symphony Orchestra, various aggregations of people. And as they all walked into the studio that day, I was introduced to each one of them individually. And the contractor would say, Jim Ed, this is Cleve Francis. By the way, you might be interested. No, he played on Yesterday. And so by the time I was standing in front of the orchestra, I was sufficiently rattled, knees shaking, worried sick is the best way to put it. And I remember going out into the record room. There were the chairs. I saw no headphones for the orchestra. And I went back in to ask the engineer producer, a very successful, famous fella named Glenn Johns, and said, Glenn, there's no headphones out there. And he said, well, yes, you're going to conduct, aren't you, Mike? I said, well, I guess I will. And so that day I became an orchestral arranger and a conductor and composer all in a single fell swoop. That night we'd gone to dinner, the guys and I, we all went to dinner to kind of celebrate. It was their first experience hearing their music portrayed in such fashion. And we went to dinner and I don't know, the gravity of the moment somehow caught up to me to where I ended up saying, gosh, how did you guys talk Glenn Johns? This is the guy who worked with the Beatles and the Stones. And I'd been in there in the evening. He was working on a Rod Stewart record. And I said, how did you talk Glenn Johns into this? And they said, well, Jeanette, he didn't think you were going to be able to do it. He had Paul Buckmaster waiting in the wings to take care of it. Paul Buckmaster was a famous orchestral arranger and done all the Elton John music and what have you. So it was daunting, but fortunately, everything worked out. There was a moment when conducting Desperado, I was going, I wonder how this is going. And I continued to conduct, and I looked back over my shoulder because my back was to the control room where everyone was sitting. And I remember looking over my shoulder, and I saw Don and Glenn Frey. They were staring sort of at the speakers. The speakers frequently would be up in the wall, and they would be looking ahead intently. And they had their mouths agape, you know, wide open. And I went, oh, that could be taken two ways. You know, it's either that they like it or, oh, my goodness, what in the world is going on? Fortunately, when I walked in, it turned out they liked it. And it really set in motion for me all that came later. The people who I'd been knocking on doors trying to get to let me arrange, finally, when they saw that credit, said, ah, Jeanette, I didn't know you were an arranger. And so they gave me a shot, and I went on to then work with Seeger and Kim Carnes and America and various other people. And actually, one day got a phone call from a well-known record executive in the business, a fellow named Clive Davis, who said, I understand you want to produce records. I know your work with the Eagles. Would you be willing to meet with me? I want to talk to you about producing. And so the Eagles even led to my subsequently then being a producer as well. So Desperado.
Well, you've had an incredible.
Of it all.
I'm sorry, I stepped on you. My bad. You've had an incredible career in music, and it's still going. You're still out there working and doing all kinds of things. We appreciate you coming on the show today to talk about your career, how it intertwined with Don Henley and the Eagles. We'll probably ask you to come back on someday, Jemad. Thank you very much for your time.
You guys have my pleasure. Have a great rest of the day.
Thank you. There you go. Jemad Norman, who, good stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
Could talk to him for a lot longer, but we have this radio format. Comedian Derek Stroop, he joins us. We're sorry to get to you a little late, Derek. We had an interview that ran a little long. Our apologies. How are you?
Oh, no worries at all. Just glad to be here. I'm doing great. How y'all doing today?
We're doing good. We're happy to have you on the show. You've got a brand new comedy album out called Eating Dinner Twice. You're on the road touring with your comedy act. How'd you get into comedy? What made you go that direction? I always ask when we have comedians on the show, when did you know you were funny?
Oh, yeah, when did I know I was funny? That would have started at probably a young age, getting in trouble, you know, being a rascal. But when I really believed I was funny was probably the locker rooms growing up, you know, when you're in high school and you start joking around with your peers and your buddies, and you kind of get in that environment, you know, you're in the 11th, 12th grade, and you really start getting comfortable with making fun of each other and having a good time. That's about the time I probably believed it. But I got into comedy, and, you know, I used to run a bar in the town I went to college in, and I just decided if I heard Wagon Wheel one more time, I was going to jump out a window. So I decided to do comedy about once every 3 months just for my friends and as a fun little thing, and one thing led to another. And then here we are 9 years later. I moved to Colorado from Alabama 9 years ago, and things have been moving fast ever since.
Yeah, I guess the follow-up to when did you know you were funny is, when did you know you had a perspective? Because that's kind of what comedy and stand-up comedy is all about, you know, setting yourself apart, telling stories uniquely, sharing things about your own life. So when did you know you had a perspective? When did you know that, you know, your life could, you could draw upon your own experiences for things that you said on stage?
You know, that, I don't think you can know that until you get in front of an audience. You know, and that's when I found out, you know, I've always had a unique perspective. That's what I've been told. I kind of see things through a different light. I think Southerners do in general. We explain things different. We see things a little different sometimes from the life we live down there. And so I didn't realize that that was unique or anybody even cared to hear that until I got in front of an audience and, you know, did some open mics, did a couple shows, and then I realized, oh, well, maybe my voice is unique. Maybe the way I observe things is different. Because when you grow up in the South, which I think is where most of the funniest people are, you don't know that you're that funny because everybody around you is pretty similar. And then you go to the middle of the country and you just start talking about your afternoon and everybody goes, now that's talent. And you go, well, I'm just telling you what I did today. So, you know, it's interesting how that comes about.
That's good stuff. We're talking with Derek Stroop. He's out on tour right now. He's got a brand new comedy album out. You've been on tour with people like Bert Kreischer and Larry the Cable Guy, John Chris, Nate Bargatze. You've developed your own style of comedy, and it's high energy. Tell us about that. How did that all come about? Where you have to try to set yourself apart a little bit, I would think.
Yeah, you know, I think mine came about pretty natural in the fact that I've always kind of ran in a high gear. I'm an excitable person. I it's easy to get me going. I start at zero, but I get to 100 in a hurry. And I didn't realize how well that would play on stage. You know, my whole life I've always been told that I was a lot. You know, you're a lot. And then you get on stage and everybody goes, no, that's the perfect amount. So the frustration and the yelling and, you know, I found that a little bit as I went on, as the years went on, and maybe my fifth, sixth, seventh year of comedy, I was in Denver on stage in the back of a bookstore and, they weren't giving me anything. They hated my accent. I feel like they were projecting a lot of thoughts on me and I snapped and I started getting angry and kind of yelling the same bits that I was doing. I started to yell them and I started to say I'm frustrated. And the room just got into a tizzy, and everybody started laughing, and then I realized that might be an angle for me.
So, you know, there's a lot of really good comedy that is coming out of the South. I think traditionally there's been a lot of good comedy that's come out of the South. So what kind of necessitated the move for you to Colorado? How did that change maybe your presentation or your point of view, and how have you kind of shared those new experiences on stage, or is it just about sharing the old experiences because people in kind of this part of the country are a little foreign to that?
That whole album that the Eating Dinner Twice album that I've got out is really a lot about the move from Alabama to Colorado. At least half that album is because, I mean, that's about as close to time travel as you can really get. And I talk about it a lot, all the way from, you know, the perspective of Carhartt. You know, it became a mainstream brand. Hipsters love Carhartt, which blew my mind. I'm from Harvest, Alabama. We've been wearing Carhartt my whole life. I never thought it was never cool. We never put on Carhartt in high school and thought, man, the women are in trouble today. You know, that's not how that worked. And to see now, you know, everybody that works remotely is dressed like a chicken farmer. That jumps off the page to me. What might not to other people, but to me, those type of observations are very clear to me, and I just take them right to stage and been getting a really good response out of it.
Talking with comedian Derek Stroop, his new comedy album is called Eating Dinner Twice. It's on Larry the Cable Guy's label, Get Her Done Records. So I would imagine that's one of your inspirations, Larry the Cable Guy. Who else have you kind of paid attention to as you have honed your craft?
Well, the first comedy special that I ever saw that really piqued my interest in comedy was Robin Williams Live on Broadway, 2006. He's a complete lunatic in that set, and it let me know that comedy can be done in several different ways. It doesn't have to be this certain cha-cha, you know, bang-bang punchline, because I don't do comedy that way. And so that was the first inspiration. But besides that, I mean, you know, the best way to describe me and the people that have inspired me, I'm somewhere between Ron White and Bill Burr. I've, you know, got a little Lewis Black in me. And those are just guys that I've always enjoyed that, you know, almost don't even seem like they're telling jokes. It just seems like that they're talking, and the funniest parts are just where they're kind of frustrated or where they're making a point that you didn't see coming. And so those guys, I would say, would kind of be the nucleus of what got me here today. Been a big Ron White fan my whole life.
Yeah, so you talked about going 9 years ago, and I try to follow comedy pretty closely, and I listened to your album today. It's very good. I'm just always interested in how kind of the grind changes, because it seems like, you know, things have changed in comedy. Now you have to be on reels. You have to produce short content. You have to have a podcast a lot of the times. You have to be a guest on people's podcasts. So how has it changed for you? And what's been a kind of tried and true way that you found to kind of build an audience?
That's a great question. With me, it was a tough transition. I'm not naturally a tech guy or a social media guy. I didn't get into comedy to have anything to do with social media. So that was a big adjustment for me and took me a little bit to figure that out. I just wanted to be funny. I wanted to grab a microphone and talk to strangers. So for me, it's been reels. It's been just sharing clips. I've got three or four clips that have gone viral. And that's the name of the game these days. It's just, unfortunately, you know, there's just more, you got a lot of TikTok comedians and stuff that are going to kind of clog up the schedule. And sometimes you got to wait for them to be terrible on stage a couple times before you get to get in behind them, because they have a million followers because they can do a handstand holding mayonnaise. So
I'm with you.
Yeah. So I am doing it the old fashioned way. I have the same management as Nate Bargatze and Jim Gaffigan and those guys. So I grind it out in the clubs and small rooms, and hone my act night after night, city after city, and I think it's a better product in the end.
Final question here for Derek Stroop. He is out on tour. Of course, we don't really have a comedy club in Wichita anymore, but he will be nearby. He'll be in Springfield, Missouri, later in August, and in Kansas City, Missouri, coming up in December. So what's the meaning of eating dinner twice?
Well, I mean, it's exactly how it sounds. I'm a big fan of fourth meal, and initially it was fourth meal, and then Taco Bell did not love that. So we switched it to more of a literal version, which I ended up liking better. But it's just a fun story on there about how I learned about taco trucks. I didn't know anything about them, man. And when I moved out here and they were like, hey, this guy's going to fill his truck up with burritos and drive around until he finds you. That's humbling. You know, that's a blessing. And so I got a nice long story about my experience with taco trucks, and that's kind of where the name of the album came from, to give people a heads up of what they're getting into.
Well, we really, really appreciate your time, Derek. We wish you the best of continued success. You're one of those comedians who really is starting to become a guy. So thank you for being on the show today. Best of luck with your new comedy album, Eating Dinner Twice. We hope to talk with you another time.
Thank you all so much for having me. I just wanted to give a quick shout out to Winfield, Kansas. That's where my fiance's family's from. Love that little town. Just wanted to give them a shout out.
That's where I'm from.
Yeah. Oh, really?
I was born there.
My wife
was born there before hospital.
Yeah, her grandparents lived there, and her sister, and I mean, she's got most of her family lives in Winfield, and it's a great little place. So I wanted to give it a shout before I hopped off of here.
All right, cool. Thank you, Derek. We appreciate it.
Yeah, man. Thank y'all. Have a great day.
Thanks, you too.
Comedian Derek Stroop, our guest. We'll be back. We've got close to an hour left. Timing's been a little off today, but we're getting it. We're right there.
It's all good.
Back in a minute.
Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Personal finance can feel like a pop quiz you didn't study for. This podcast is your study guide. On NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast, you'll hear from trusted journalists who explain the why behind major financial decisions. You'll get research-backed insights and clear pros and cons, whether you're planning a big purchase or just want to grow your wealth. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app. Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Would you look at that? It's time for some of our favorite Snapple Real Facts. Real Fact 1433, toe wrestling is a competitive sport. Real Fact 732, the chicken is the closest living relative of the Tyrannosaurus Rex. And Real Fact 1599, a man once ate an entire airplane. Youch, did he have any hot sauce? Yeah, so anyways, this has been a refreshing break brought to you by Snapple. Real tea, real juice.
With Snapple, it's refreshing!
How We Made Your Mother is a rewatch podcast that looks back episode by episode at the hit TV show How I Met Your Mother. It's hosted by me, Josh Radner, along with series co-creator and my friend Craig Thomas.
Follow How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.